Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Tri-State Sports Guys, coming to you live from the Perry Avenue Bar and Grill in beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. I've got a great show on hand for our first show of 2013. To my right, I got my co-host, Neil Lynch. How are we doing, Neil?
Pretty good. We started off with a bang.
We really did it. I'm glad to have you back in the studio. Tony D stuck at a shoe show somewhere.
Shoe show by the seashore.
Somewhere, I assume. But he might be calling a little later on with a Say What segment. It's been an eventful week. I don't know how much of the bowl games you've been watching. You've been watching a lot of them? You watched the New Year's Day. I think everybody kind of sits around and watches.
Yeah, I was straight pajamas all day. And had it on in the background while I was surfing and doing whatnot on the interwebs. So
yeah.
Some interesting stuff that went down. I of course, the one thing that I tweeted about the entire time was Heather Cox's post-game interview with David Shaw. That was about it.
Yeah. But obviously the thing that's hit, you know, today everywhere, and obviously yesterday was the hit that guy had on that Michigan running back. I think the guy's name is Clowney, that D lineman.
Jadavion.
I mean, they were legitimately talking today about he's in the Heisman race. I mean, I know he was good, and he was Defensive Player of the Year in his conference and all, and he's very good. But one hit now has made this guy just a household name, and unluckily for him, he's not eligible to come out into the draft. Because that was a guy, I mean, the Jets would trade up to the first pick to pick him, for that hit.
They
drafted the Terminator on a couple of big hits, playing for Kentucky. And that was enough for Rex to say, we need to get this guy in the fourth round, fullback who's out of the league. So, I mean, that would be somebody that coaches like Rex Ryan and his ilk would have jumped all over. But that hit was huge, man. It really changed the game. Devastated the Michigan fans everywhere across the country. But we're going to talk a little bit. We don't do a lot of college football talk here. We are going to do a decent amount today in preparation for the national championship game on Monday night. We're going to get to that. We actually have a great guest calling in today, Norwalk native and BC linebacker, all ACC honorable mention this year, Kevin Pierre-Lewis. He's going to be calling in a little bit later on. We'll get his thoughts on a bunch of things, BC football, Norwalk football, just college football in general. So we're excited to hear from him coming up. We're also obviously going to talk about the Jets-Giants. I hinted to an article I was writing for the site who had the more disappointing season. And that'll be up later on tonight on our website, so you can check it out.
You're nuts if you think it's the Giants. You're nuts.
You're going to have to read it to find out. I'm not going to even hint to where it's going. I think you're going to be, judging from your reaction, I think you're going to be surprised at my take on it.
All right.
But I think, you know, I'm going to lay out the points as to why I went with how I went. It's almost done, so it'll be up tonight, you know, before 11 o'clock probably. You'll be able to check it out, and you can post on it if you want. But regardless, you know, it's the first time since 2003 that New York's not going to be sending a team to the playoffs, which is kind of amazing. You know, that's a decent run. That's almost a full decade of, either the Jets or the Giants being in it. And the Jets, you know, probably half and half. You know, they've probably been in the playoffs, I don't know off the top of my head, 5 or 6 times over the last 10 years. They've been in the playoffs a decent amount. So it's not like it's just been Giants dominated, and the Giants have missed a decent amount. But
Well, the big concern for the NFL is that you have a lot of the bigger markets not in the playoffs. Philly,
Chicago, Dallas.
Yeah, obviously, we don't have an LA team, but Dallas, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, right. And even though Houston is a big market, it's not that kind of market that carries the ratings. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think that there are some big matchups that could happen. I mean, I think if you're Roger Goodell, you want to see Peyton keep going because I think he is somebody that people will follow no matter what. To some extent, the story of the Colts is enough where, you know, you've heard about it. You know, you see grown men cry about the Pagano thing, and I get all that. It's been amazing. They're shaving their heads and the cheerleaders shaving their heads and all that. It's a great story. You got a rookie quarterback coming in. It's really amazing. How it just shows you how a good franchise is run, and they're able to just bounce back from a 2-14 season and go 11-5 with some really big wins. I mean, they couldn't get past the Jets, but that loss really turned their season around, man.
I know that you're pulling for the Colts to win the Super Bowl now, so that you can say that.
I mean, we beat the Super Bowl champ, man. So, you know, I think that, yeah, they're, it could go either way ratings-wise. I mean, the Super Bowl is going to be big no matter what. Anybody does, I don't, although it doesn't get 100 rating, I don't know anyone that doesn't watch the Super Bowl. I'm sure there are people around. But I'm talking about from all walks of life, non-sports fans, men, women, old,
yeah,
young. Who doesn't watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah. I mean, homeless people are watching the Super Bowl.
They're up on it. Yeah. No, they're up on it. They're looking in windows. They know all about it. So I don't think you got to worry about the Super Bowl. But, you know, when you get into the championship games, you know, those you're really going to need good matchups to drive ratings, I think. Even, you know, regardless, the ratings are so big. It's not like the NFL is ever in problem, you know, and has anything to worry about. But, you know, there are some troublesome matchups ratings-wise.
There are a lot of compelling storylines. I mean,
oh, yeah,
despite the fact that you don't have a lot of teams with huge fan bases, I mean, you know, I know the Pats are looking to get back into the win column in the Super Bowl and with their Super Bowl track record. You have Peyton Manning and,
yeah,
Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
And that feeds into the MVP talk that we have debated in the past. So there's still
you
a
got
lot of,
now the Ray Lewis aspect even.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people – he is a polarizing figure. There are some people that talk about him as being – one of the best linebackers of all time, if not the best middle linebacker of all time. And then there's also people on the other end of the spectrum that never forgive him for the, you know, his murder trial he was on. That was done, and they'll bring that up to the day he dies, you know.
Yeah.
So, but regardless, it's going to be a story you're going to hear about over and over. This is his last run. He's going to get back on the field this weekend, and he's going to be playing, and, you know, they're going to win it for him, and he runs that team. And, I mean, love him or hate him, it is. He has put his stamp on the game. It is going to be weird to watch a Ravens game next year without him. And then, you know, and you know, you could debate who was even a better player and who was more important at defense, him or Ed Reed. And I heard experts saying they still think Ed Reed is a better safety than Ray Lewis as a linebacker. I tend to disagree. I think Ray Lewis was so good. Having watched him when we were down in Baltimore, we watched a lot. You know, they were always on, so kind of followed him. And I thought he was as good as he was hyped to be. I mean,
yeah,
he was in on every, you watch a game and you watch a pile at the end of a play, he's always in the screen.
It's true. And, you know, the motivational factor as well, you know, the fact that he's able to hype up other players.
Oh, yeah, the leader to players on
the
offense.
And get them amped up. I mean, but the difference for me is, you know, I think Ed Reed's a game changer in that if he ever gets his hands on the ball, there's a chance that he's going to score.
Yeah.
And that with the Baltimore Ravens, the way that their games, especially early on,
yeah,
you know, in the early 2000s, I mean, the defense and special teams are winning games.
Yeah.
Ed Reed was a major part of the scoring those points. So
mm-hmm.
I can see where people would side with Ray, but, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I would rather have Ed Reed.
Yes, it's definitely a debate. I don't think there's a definitive answer one way or the other, but Baltimore would be an interesting team in this playoffs because – they're almost a forgotten team because of their kind of slide toward the end of the season, and even though they bounced back, you know, the big win against the Giants. But, you know, you forget. I mean, they should have been in overtime in that game against the Patriots last year on route to the Super Bowl if it wasn't for a missed, what was it, 30-yard kick or whatever it was. And then, you know, going into this season, they had all these high hopes for their offense. And, you know, Joe Flacco is, you know, something of an enigma because there's games when he looks like he is a legit quarterback and can lead a team to the Super Bowl. And there's times he looks brutal. And I think this is going to be his time to shine. And I, you know, they're definitely an interesting team because when they're clicking on all cylinders, even though their defense isn't what it was, it's still a very good defense. And their offense can be as talented as anybody, you know, with the weapons that they have. So they'll be an interesting team. Like you said, there's a million interesting storylines.
The rookie quarterback, RG3, Russell Wilson. I mean, that I'm kind of pissed because I didn't want to see a Redskins Seahawks this early.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of game that I want to see battling for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like those are the two teams that have the hot hands right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Seahawks are putting up a lot of points. The Redskins look like they have their act together. So I don't know that I really don't want to see the Pack going very far or getting anywhere close.
Yeah.
49ers, you know, I'm not too big into them. And, you know, the Falcons, I mean, I don't know. I just
the thing about the Niners is they are an interesting storyline in that they switched their quarterback middle of the season, even though it was due to injury, when a guy had a quarterback rating of 104 and had shown over a year and a half he was solid. And you wonder, the 49ers come in and Kaepernick chokes under his first game. It's like, you know, harboring on any criticism over that, even though they've lost a bunch of games. And I know the upside is there and all of that, but this is a win-now league, and to take a team that was as good as they were last year and as good as they've been this year and make a change at quarterback when it's not like your quarterback is costing you games.
Yeah.
He hasn't.
But the argument was that Al Smith wasn't winning games either, and Harbaugh doesn't want to leave anything to guessing, and he wants to have a not so sure thing. We have the sure thing in Colin Kaepernick.
Well, I don't think Kaepernick is a sure thing, and I will disagree. I mean, I think that Alex Smith single-handedly won that game last year in the playoffs against the Saints when he out-dueled, Drew Brees when nobody said that they could win the game in the air. He was making passes, dangerous passes, that they needed to make.
That gazelle-like run around.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so it's not like he can't do it, you know what I mean? But, we're going to get to the NFL throughout the show. But now we want to turn back to college football. We got a lot of people who've been writing in on our message board and all this, talking about college football. So it's going to be great to bring in a guest today. We got on the hotline, on the 99 Bottles hotline, Kevin Pierre Lewis from Boston College. Kevin, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Kevin, thanks again for joining us. It's Mike DePalma, Neil Lynch here. We're just going over some NFL stuff. We're going to get back to college now. Now, you've had just a great 3 years with Boston College. There's really no way around that. You were inserted into the starting defense, right as a true freshman, which is rare. Talk a little bit about that transition coming out of relatively small. I mean, you're coming out of Fairfield County, not exactly, Western Pennsylvania or South Florida as far as recruiting goes. And you come up to a big-time program like Boston College and you're thrust into the starting lineup right away. Talk a little bit about that kind of transition.
Well, yeah, thanks. First and foremost, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. But to get into the transitions, I was lucky throughout my career to have great coaches, especially the one I had in high school, Dan Gowan. With his help, he allowed me to be seen by college coaches and get a chance to start college early. And that's exactly what I did going into foregoing my senior spring season and attending Boston College early. That spring semester allowed me to pretty much grab a hold of college life, both academically and on the field. And so when preseason came around, I pretty much knew where to go during practice. I knew how to practice, which was most important. And then from there, I was just able to craft my skills and learn the defense better, which allowed me to take one further step more than the rest of my freshman class that came in with me. And excuse me?
No, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, and it's pretty much just learning the ropes from guys like Mark Herzlick and Luke Kuechly. I was pretty much able to just sit back and watch those guys and learn from those guys as I progressed further into my freshman season.
Now, let me ask you, I mean, coming in, as obviously you were a highly rated recruit coming out of King Lo Haywood, did you go into that, like you said, you went in early spring semester of what would have been your senior year in high school. Did you know, all right, I'm going to start freshman year? I mean, obviously it's everybody's goal. Nobody wants to be redshirted. Nobody wants to sit the bench. But was that a realistic thing to you, or you came in that spring and you said, yeah, I'm going to start as a true freshman? Or did it even surprise you how quickly your skills transcended to the college game?
Yes, I mean, coming from a humble upbringing, it did surprise me at first. But once I got that role, I quickly found out that the coaches had faith in me, as well as the rest of the 10 guys that were on the field that were starting with me had the faith in me, and that I had to pretty much put aside that I was a freshman coming in, starting my first college football game, pretty much going up against guys that I watched throughout high school just in awe and just knew that I was one of those guys now. So it was surprising at first, but I mean, as the games developed, I pretty much knew that I was one of these guys now and had to act like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously everybody from Norwalk was pulling for you and following you and everything. Just to expand on the Norwalk thing a little bit, I mean, I played football in Norwalk, so we all have some pride in following all the local guys and how they're doing. And in my lifetime, I can't remember a time when so many people from Norwalk are playing big-time roles in big-time college football programs. Obviously, everybody knows Silas Red out at USC. Now Max Wittick, who grew up in Norwalk and, you know, since moved to California to hone his skills out there. Even DJ Moore from Old Dominion, you know, we saw him when they had that televised game in December. Talk a little bit about the rest of the guys from Norwalk, and do you follow these guys? Is that something that you follow? Do you stay in touch with them? Talk a little bit about the other guys from Norwalk throughout the country.
Yeah, it's always great to see other guys pretty much have their hard work pay off. There's a lot more guys out there who've been doing well in their careers. It's unfortunate they haven't been able to get that shot. But players like Silas and I, Max and DJ, we've been able to get that opportunity and take advantage of it. I personally keep in contact with Silas a lot, seeing that we've pretty much played on the same football team until college from the time we were 8 years old. As for Max, Silas and I actually played on the same Pop Warner team for a year until pretty much, I think, I guess that's when Max had moved away. And it was crazy to see that Silas and I were on the same team. So I pretty much laughed about that. But it's going to be fun when we get to play them. I believe it's the fourth game of the season next year. It'll be the first time we all go up against each other. But like I said before, it's great to see these guys pretty much excel and play something that they love and that we grew up playing together and just having so much fun out there. And just for the rest of the guys who are on the come-ups, just my advice to them would just be take advantage of the opportunities that are given to them. There's not too many times that you can get those opportunities, but when you do, you have to take advantage of them because you're never promised that another one will come up.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. Now, you know, you mentioned earlier the opportunities that going to King of Haywood, you know, provided you. Great program and a program that has a history of, you know, helping kids get into college. I mean, when I was at Norwalk, I was a kid from Norwalk. Billy Greenwood went on to North Carolina. And, you know, a lot of players, even, you know, back in the 90s when I played, would decide to go to whether it be a St. Luke's or King of Haywood for that reason. So, obviously, the decision worked out great for you, worked out great for Silas. The decision to move to California worked out great for Max. But is there ever a time when you think back, like, and maybe you're too young to think of it now, but I'm sure you'll think of it when you're older. Man, what if we all stayed and went to North? I don't know if you would have gone to McMahon or Norwalk High. I don't know what part of town you live in, but wouldn't it have been great if we were all on the same high school team together? I mean, we guys would have dominated, you know?
Oh, no, definitely. I think about that every once in a while. That runs through my head. I would have actually went to Norwalk High. I went to West Rocks Middle School prior to going to King. And in my district, I would have went straight to Norwalk High, which I would have been proud to go to that school and pretty much play with the guys that I grew up playing Pop Warner with throughout, all the way from Ramblers all the way to the last level of Pop Warner. We would have definitely, I really believe we would have definitely dominated, but unfortunately things didn't pan out that way, but it was also great. I remember my last year of high school football, we actually got to scrimmage Norwalk High in a jamboree, and that was pretty much a time that Silas and I could pretty much get back at the guys who frowned upon our decision of going to King and not going the public school route. They pretty much thought that the league was worse than the FCAC, that we weren't going up against good competition. That's why we were excelling so well. And from there, we was able to prove to them that it's not about the competition. It's about how much work you put into the sport. So it was good just knocking head with those guys again and pretty much catching back on old times, I would say. But just to get back to the Norwalk High thing, we would have definitely dominated the FCAC if everyone that should have gone to Norwalk High went to Norwalk High.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear you went to West Rock. I'm a West Rock graduate myself, so I'm glad
nice.
To hear that. So, yeah, and even, you know, when I played, I played quarterback, and there was a guy who was my backup. When I was a junior, he was a sophomore, and, I mean, there was no doubt when he was a junior he was going to start over me, and he decided to transfer to St. Luke's. He wound up going on to play at Appalachian State's kid, James Bayless, great athlete. So, you know, sometimes it works out for us public school kids, too, because it allowed me to start again my senior year because this kid was a talent, and he wound up going there. So, you know, I'm close friends with the coach at Norwalk High now, Sean Ireland. He's building a great program over there. So I know it's always a struggle for him to keep kids in town. But, you know, on the same token, look, it's worked out for all you guys, so you can never second-guess the decision. So, but getting back to your career at BC, now my sister-in-law graduated from BC in 09, so she was gone before you got there. But I was able to go to a lot of games when she was up there. Great place to play, you know, great fan base. Great atmosphere, the student section's loud and crazy. And in my mind, you know, BC is the premier program in New England. No offense to my UConn fans out there. But, I mean, you know, New England-wise, it's great. So talk a little bit about playing in front of that crowd. And I know you guys had a down season this year, but the crowd's still there. I got friends that are BC grads that go to every game, drive up to Boston every week from Norwalk when they're home. So, I mean, the fan base is there. Talk a little bit about playing in front of that crowd and what that's like.
Playing in front of that crowd is honestly amazing. I couldn't have asked for anything else as a college athlete. The super fans are the heart. I would say it's the super fans, then the alumni, because there's a constant threat of alumni coming in, buying season tickets, showing up to every game and cheering on the Eagles. It's just crazy walking in there, seeing all your classmates in their yellow superfan shirts just cheering you on, guys that you might only see for 50 minutes three times a week, just pretty much believing in the players. And that's one of the great things about Alumni Stadium, that everyone believes in the players at that moment for those four quarters, and we all just pretty much come together as a community. And that's what Boston College is. It's a huge community.
Yeah, it's one that, I mean, I have a lot of friends that went to BC. None that played football are up there. But, you know, you talk to BC guys, they're so proud of their BC stuff, man. You almost get sick hearing about it. Like, all right, I get it. You guys went to BC. I love it. So, I mean, that's a great place to play. And like you said, I mean, they worship football up there. So going up there and being in the student section and also tailgating with the alumni, you know, it's great to see. You always want to have a fan base like that. Now, I want to ask you also, you've obviously in your career played at some big time stadiums. I mean, you've gone to play at Florida State, Georgia Tech, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, Syracuse. You've been to, what is the one that has impressed you the most? What is the one stadium? And I don't know if awestruck is the right word, but that you walked in there and you're saying, man, I grew up watching this on TV, playing, PlayStation, playing at the stadium. And like, what was the one stadium that really kind of took your breath away to walk into and play?
I would say I actually have two in mind, but the one that took my breath away the first time I stepped in the stadium was playing Florida State. It was my freshman year, I believe. Yes, it was my freshman year. I remember stepping onto the field for pregame and hearing the crowd do the Indian chant, and I could literally feel it going through my arms. It was like a picture perfect moment. Like I felt like I was in a movie, honestly. Like, it's like one of those things that you try to explain to someone, but unless they go through it, they really can't understand what you actually are feeling at that moment. And just to feel that roar just go through your veins, through your hands, and literally just like leave your body was an amazing moment for me. But second to that, it's just one place I look forward to playing. And luckily I get to play there one more time my senior year coming this fall, is at Notre Dame. That place is D.C. Notre Dame. That place is just unbelievable. As much as I do not want to admit it, it's one of the greatest atmospheres I've ever played in, especially when we get to play those guys, because both sides just get riled up, and it's just a different feeling. Like, it's strictly business, and that place is an amazing place to play.
Yeah, that's a great rivalry. It's been like that way for a while, so I can imagine that's something special. But I'm glad you brought up Florida State. You know, the guy used to co-host with me pitched at Wake Forest, and his first appearance, it was at Florida State, and it was against J.D. Drew. And he said the same thing. He comes out of the bullpen, and the place is doing the Tomahawk chant. On the big screen, they got J.D. Drew's face and his stats, and he's batting 500 whenever he's batting. And he said the same thing. He goes, it's just chills. He says, it feels surreal. And this is this kid's first appearance, you know, coming out of bullpen,
yeah.
And he said the same thing as you. He said, you can't even explain to somebody what that's like. So I'm glad you brought up Florida State, because that is something that always talked about it many times. Now, Neil, you got any questions for Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Neil.
I noticed, so you were talking about Notre Dame and playing there and the atmosphere that comes along with it. They're obviously in the national title game. You've seen a decent amount of them. What do you think the keys are to stopping them and to preventing the Fighting Irish from getting that title?
For Alabama, what are the keys for them?
Yeah, what do they need to do to prevent Mike DePalma from enjoying a Notre Dame title?
Pretty much for Alabama, the keys for them, watching film on both teams, I would say this game is going to be won by defense. Notre Dame has an amazing defense. Alabama obviously has an amazing defense. It's pretty much who can stop who from scoring at this point. Notre Dame's offense, they can dress up a lot of things, confuse you, throw the ball here and there, and they have great options, as well as Alabama. So pretty much it's whoever can stop who first and make that final last play is going to win that game, because there are two great opponents going up against each other.
And as far as you going to the next level, you're 6'1", you're 215. Many would say it's a little undersized for the NFL at the linebacker position. Are you looking to put on some pounds and stick at linebacker, or do you think that you would be able to move to a strong safety position and excel there?
Yeah, I'm pretty – what helps me out at the linebacker position, especially being undersized, I'm about like almost – I'm getting close to 225 now, so I'm trying to put on the weight. But also my speed helps me out a lot. So I'm going to keep working on my speed, getting a little faster, and make a possible change to a safety position. I'm going to – first and foremost, I need to take care of my career at Boston College, so wherever the coaches think I fit best in their scheme to help out the team, that's most important to me. But as for going to the next level, I would definitely not be opposed to moving to a defensive back position, and I don't think that my skill sets would prevent me from doing that at all, as a matter of fact. So that's definitely something I've been thinking about.
And finally, BC, not the greatest year, only two wins on the season. The wins have gone down considerably since your freshman year. What does the team need to do? And you had some tough losses this year, played some close, hard-fought games against Virginia Tech and some other bowl teams. What is it that BC needs to do to turn it around next season?
Well, we're getting new coaches now. Not saying that was one of our issues in the past couple years, but however, it should be something that should definitely be a focal point for the players, and the change in the program has to come from the players. From outside sources, everyone says that we need to change. They're pretty much giving us a bunch of excuses of why we weren't doing too well. Pretty much now we're going to have a new staff. We're going to have everything pretty much everyone else wanted us to have. So there's no more excuses. It has to come from the players. We have to realize that this game is just not about us individually. Yes, we're the people that play every down, but we have to realize that the whole Boston College community is behind us. That when we play, everyone's looking at us, that we have to pretty much live up to their expectations and surpass them as the Eagles have done in the past. And realize that pretty much what we put out on the field is going to give life to everyone else that's walking around the campus for the next couple of days until the following Saturday.
Well, Kevin, thanks again. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out, joining us. We wish you the best of luck. Always look forward to rooting for a Norwalk guy. So have a great season next year. Hopefully you guys get things turned around. We'll be pulling for you. I'll try to make it up to a game, and best of luck to you and the rest of your team next year, all right?
Yes, thank you. Appreciate it. I will say you definitely need to make it up to a game next year, because I can't allow my senior season to end up as it did in the past for my fellow seniors that have graduated. So we're nothing but to turn things around this season.
All right. Well, best of luck to you, Kevin, and thanks again for joining us. That's Kevin Pierre-Lewis from Boston College. Really great linebacker. Great story coming out of Norwalk. We got a lot of listeners in Norwalk, so everybody's been following his career, since high school. So it'll be exciting, like you said, to see them play USC next year. seeing three kids from Norwalk play very prominent roles in a game like that. So, but obviously the best luck. And seems like a good kid. Seems like, you know, he gets it. And, I mean, how could you not root for a guy like that, you know?
Yeah, and it sounds like he's got the work ethic to play at the next level as well. He's willing to do what it takes to, you know, and he's versatile. He's someone that can play the linebacker position, someone who can step in at safety, and, you know, can probably pick up the scheme and deliver. I mean, you know, top three or four in tackles his first 3 years. And, you know, he learned from the best, Mark Herzog.
That's it. He learned from your boy over in East Rutherford there. Yeah, I mean, the guy was, you know, Rivals.com had him as an All-American freshman. And, you know, it was All-ACC, I don't want to mention, this past year, despite missing a couple games. Sky's the limit, really, for a kid like that.
Yeah.
Coming out of a good program out of Stanford. So, you know, best of luck to him.
And he must get a lot of ladies with that French last name.
Oh, my gosh.
Ladies love French.
He's got that smooth voice to him. My goodness. Great Mexico. After the game, I had to fight him and leave my wife at home. But, yeah, you know, like I said to him, man, can you just imagine, as a kid from Norwalk, Norwalk High graduate, man, you get those kids, and you don't realize the talent these guys could have had, you know, and they were good. I mean, his senior year, Norwalk High was good, you know, without those guys. Man, it could have been something, but, you know, like he said, his decision was the best thing for him, and look where it turned out, so good thing for him. So, but sticking with college football, we got to talk a little bit about the national championship game. I'm not going to give my prediction now. We have some bold predictions later on in the show, which might include some Notre Dame-ery. I didn't want to talk to Kevin as much as that. Let him on how much of a Notre Dame fan I am. But you know, going into this game, the spread opened at 10. It's pretty much held steady. Last I saw it was at 10.5. It's a pretty big spread for a national championship game for the two, you know, the number two team in the country to be favored. Double digits over the number one seed. But, you know, Notre Dame has had that all season long. Who did they beat? You know, I know they went out and beat Oklahoma. You know, they should have lost to Pitt. You know, they did beat Stanford. They beat USC, but it was a down year for USC. All these different excuses. But, you know, I'm going to go back to that defense. And, you know, I think that the layoff could go either way. You know, you have the offensive team has a chance to say, all right, we can come up with a legitimate scheme. We're going to be all healthy. We have a legitimate scheme to attack this pass rush. How are we going to do that? Same token, the defense now has had a month to sit and look at what Alabama does well and how are we going to attack that. So what do you think are your – I mean, we talked a little bit about the keys to the game. We talked a little with Kevin, and I agree. It's going to come down to defense. So it's going to come down to defense. Is 10.5 too big of a spread, you think? Or do you think that's right? I mean, it hasn't moved.
I don't know that Notre Dame has really proven to me offensively that they can work out a game plan to get past that Alabama defense. I mean, I know that Alabama's D maybe not as good as they were in years past, but I don't know. You know, they got Everett Golson, who's from Myrtle Beach.
And he's come on. I mean, he has progressed as quickly as I've seen really in any quarterback throughout the course of the season. I thought he stunk at the beginning of the year, and I don't even think that's being mean. I think that he stunk, and he progressed and progressed and progressed, and he did. You know, he obviously got what he could do with his legs. He's got a strong arm, you know, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's not making the mistakes that he made early on in the season. I think that he's obviously the key to the game. But, you know, he's been efficient down the stretch. So I think that he can cause some problems for the Alabama defense, let alone their running attack, which, you know, there's a two-headed attack. But, you know, I think that I don't see Alabama completely shutting down Notre Dame's offense. As limited as I think, you know, Notre Dame's offense could be, obviously they got the studded tight end. And you know, it's going to come down to Golson. Can he use his wide receivers and move the ball down the field? It wouldn't shock me if they're able to put up 17, 20 points, which might be enough to win.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it's not this low-scoring affair. I'm an offensive guy, and I want to see points on the board.
Yeah, I want to see another repeat of the LSU game where it was just
– it was just painful. But, yeah, I mean, to me, I don't know why I think this, but – Notre Dame seems to be their ability to succeed has hinged on the kind of big play kind of the, not the miracle play, but the plays that just somehow the ball bounces their way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like Alabama has more of a consistency to their offense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are going to be looking to Monty Teo
mm-hmm.
to step up and show people what he can do in the national spotlight. You'll see what he's worth. You know, a lot of people are not grading him or ranking very high for the draft, and so maybe he can come out with a chip on his shoulder. I don't know how much he pays attention to the media, probably not at all, but, you know, I think there's – and that goes for the whole Notre Dame team. You know, they're coming in here and they're huge underdogs, and I think that plays into their favor. If you're the coach in that locker room, you're using that to your advantage. It's bulletin board material, and who knows? Also, you got to look on the Alabama side of things. Nick Saban, what's his future?
Yeah.
You know, does that play into the how the players play? Are they going to be? Are they going to rise up around him and say, you know, "Do you get one for the Gipper" type of moment?
Yeah.
Or are they going to say, "Well, he's on the way out. He doesn't care about us anymore. The underclassmen are going to take umbrage that he's possibly leaving." So, you know, and then I think was it the, one of their bigger D linemen is academically ineligible? Was that Georgia?
I saw the guy in Georgia was. I had not seen him. I could look it up. I had not to say that that's not the case. I just hadn't read that.
Yeah. But, it, you know, it just, to me, you know, SEC, powerhouse. I'm glad that there's not another SEC team in the title game. And, you know, it'll be, you know, they're two of the most storied franchises in college football. I don't know that you could ask for it to be any better. And, you know, a part of me kind of wants to see an upset. You know,
yeah.
I'm not
an Alabama fan, and you're not a Notre Dame hater, which I'm sure, I don't think you're an Alabama, I mean, a Notre Dame hater.
I like watching their games because, well, like Kevin said, that atmosphere and that environment, it's just, it's addictive.
Yeah.
You know, you feed off of it. You know, and growing up watching Notre Dame games on NBC,
yeah.
You know, I was always rooting against them, but I always liked watching them.
Yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that's really how I got into Notre Dame because they were always on TV. I told the story about my mom got me the starter jacket because it was on clearance and that's what it was double X and I was 5'2". But that's what I got. So I'm like, yeah, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I got the starter jacket.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting against Notre Dame when TC was coaching at BC.
Yeah.
And they pulled that upset.
Now the only thing I will say that if you are a believer in, you know, camaraderie and you know leadership and all of those things that. You know, you can never quantify, and some people are believers in it. I tend to not be a huge believer in all that. I tend to believe that talent ultimately wins, although in football, I think it's a little bit different than, like, a sport like baseball. I think baseball, you know, a good clubhouse, you know, I'm not a big believer that you need to have a good clubhouse to be a good team in baseball. But in football, you know, you look at what they've gone through. They rallied around Monte Teo when he, you know, he had those, you know, tragic losses in his life back-to-back in that week. And, you know, you look at that, you look at how they've – you know, they're you know, a veteran team that's played together and they got a bunch of seniors and all of this stuff. If you're a believer in that, then that's got to – you know, this will test that theory, I really think. Because talent-wise, Alabama's going to send a lot more guys to the NFL. They're going to go on to a lot more success. Coaching-wise, I mean, you can't put many people ahead of Nick Saban in the last 20 years in college football. So coaching-wise, you're going to have to, you know, tend to lean towards Alabama as well. But – that being said, if you're a believer in that camaraderie and the great, you know, locker room atmosphere and leadership and all of those things, well, this will put that theory to the test. I really think so. And I don't know if that'll have an impact or not, but I think that'll be something to keep an eye on. And I think if Notre Dame is able to pull out an upset, that might lead some credence to that theory that does make a difference. And I think at the college level and especially in football, maybe it does.
Yeah. I mean, it boils down to, like you said, Golson. You know, he's really emerged and he's shown that he can lead the team and they're going to have to follow, you know, Johnny Football's blueprint.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he was able to move in the pocket and avoid the rush and make plays.
Yeah.
And if Golson can do that and not get bottled up and contained and roll out and maybe just get him to move and move the offense, move the line, who knows?
Yeah,
I think if he can pick up chunks of yardage on scrambling, and you know it'll pull the defense in when he gets outside the pocket, and then
yeah,
guys will get open.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a great game to watch. I don't think it's gonna be a lopsided game. But if you have any thoughts on it, you can always call us. We'll be taking calls today if you want to do talk a lot about the national championship game. Call the numbers 347-637-2306. We're going to transition over to the NFL now. We talked briefly at the beginning of the show about the disappointment in New York. You know, Giants missing the playoffs after starting 6-2, coming off the Super Bowl, basically bringing their whole team back. Let's talk about the Giants a little bit. Obviously, they came out with a big-time statement win for whatever it's worth with the last game of the season, with a huge win over the Eagles, even after the onside kick. And you say yourself, well, part of you says, well, where was this team the two prior weeks? And part of you says, well, the Eagles just stunk. But what does this season do for the Giants moving forward? I mean, looks like they're going to lose OC. He said he's gone. Whether Tuck's coming back, I don't know. But that being said, those guys had down years. So they want, this is maybe not the best time to go test the free agent market after coming off a season where offensive schemes have shown how to expose you and how to prevent you from having an impact on the game. So where do the Giants go from here? And does this, you know, blip here set them back? Is this like, you know, the end of this little Coughlin-Eli run that some, you know, Giants fans are fearing? Or is it just, you know, we were one game short of making the playoffs, play here. You know, you and I talked off air, a field goal made here, you know, a pick not thrown here, maybe they're in it, and then they go on a run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overreact to this season. I mean, you know, they're always in the hunt. You know, I wrote an article for the site, and basically saying in the Coughlin era, they've only had one losing season. That was his first season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were 9-7 last year and won miserable, and 9-7 this year. And if a few things go their way over the course of the final few weeks, they're in the playoffs, and they're a totally different team in the playoffs, and who would have thought that D-end was going to be a concern for this team? And now it is, because, like you said, OC's probably gone, Tuck is probably gone, JVP, I don't know that he has progressed to the level where he can take over a game by himself.
Yeah, now that that offenses are saying, we're going to double-team you because, you know, we're not scared of the rest of your D-line like we were. The Giants don't blitz. Like we talked about Barry Fuel, Sean Ireland was in the studio, and he said, you know, he's so inflexible, it seems.
Yeah.
But this is our game plan. And it's like, if it's not working, well, we're going to stick with it. So, you know, almost like Rex Ryan with the ground and pound. It's like, this is what we're doing. We're sticking with it. We're not going to send more people. We've done it in the past. We're sending four. This is how we're going to do it. And they're inflexible.
But here's the thing with that game plan. And they actually re-signed Perry Fuel. So he's not leaving, which, you know, say what you will about that. But the reason why the Perry's schemes work, and I said this before, with the three safety look, they did it last year with Deion Grant, this year with Stevie Brown and Kenny Phillips, and now Trevor Lowell. And when they have OC Tuck and JVP on the field at the same time, when they have that combination, it's a winning combination. They crush.
Yeah.
But then it's like he's calling the same plays without the same personnel.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're not in the game, and you can see they get exposed, and they gashed for big yardage.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a problem. Is Fuel needs to be able to adapt to his personnel, and maybe that's an offseason adjustment. I know that Tom Coughlin, the main concern for him coming in was he's too disciplinarian, he's too hard nosed, and then he goes through a losing season, and then 2007 rolls around, and he starts, okay, you know what? I'm going to be a little bit more flexible. I'm going to have this select group of veteran players that I can confide in and trust in, and then I'm going to, you know, take some feedback and then adjust. So hopefully that the same applies for Perry Fuel. Moving over to the offensive side of the ball, God damn it, Kevin Gilbride. Where the hell were these plays
the last
2 weeks?
Yeah.
I mean, splitting out Bradshaw, splitting out Wilson, sending them an intermediate and deep routes against the linebacking core, simple outs to Cruz. You know, it's just like they made it look so easy.
Yeah.
And you're wondering, like, they didn't have – I mean, Hakeem Nicks, obviously banged up, not 100%. You can see how big. Everyone says, oh, Victor Cruz, like he's the one failing the New York Giants.
Yeah.
Hakeem Nicks, if you look at last year's success, he was catching balls over the middle and going to the end zone.
Yeah.
He was splitting defenses down the middle.
Yeah.
You know, that game against the playoff game against Atlanta and in other games. I mean, you could see he didn't have the push off.
Yeah.
He couldn't come out of his breaks like he used to. And that's what has to happen. The Giants are a team. They're like the epitome of a team. There's not one person that you can point to and say, this is the person that's going to lead us to a championship like AP is doing in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's really a team effort, you know, and that's why Eli, I'm so hard on Eli because we're holding Eli up to be like this, like his brother, the kind of guy that can carry his team and put the team on his shoulders. And it's very rare for Eli to do that. And it seems like he needs to be in these, like, do-or-die situations in the playoffs where they're like, Eli, we're going to lose. We need you to do something, yeah. And he ends up doing something.
Yeah, I think it's unfair, and I've been saying that for 2 years. It's unfair of Giants fans. You know, the whole thing with the elite comment last year, thrust him in the conversation, then he lived up to the hype and all. But it's unfair for Giants fans to expect him to be his brother and have these conversations. I would rather have Eli in a one-game situation over his brother, and I would, you know, I'd put him above Drew Brees and this and that. You know, there's no shame in being the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the league, but he's not Tom Brady, he's not his brother, he's not Aaron Rodgers. I don't even think he's Drew Brees as bad as Drew Brees played this year. I don't think he's Drew Brees. You know, like you said, when things like, you know, he as clutch as anybody as I've really ever seen. In the fact that he could look so bad and turn it on and really have a short memory.
But that's how the people were beating the Giants this year.
Mm-hmm.
In close games, when they did lose close games, they didn't have the ball last.
Yeah.
Teams were finding out ways to sustain and keep drives until that clock hit zeros.
Yeah.
And that's how they lost against Washington, and that's, you know, what eventually cost them the season.
Yeah, it's you know, that's why to me, the comparison to his brother is completely different. You know, you could talk about his great game-winning drives and all that, but the first three quarters matter. You know,
yeah,
they do matter, and the regular season matters. And you know,
you can see that against the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Falcons. This is where it comes back to bite the Giants. That philosophy that we'll turn it on when we can.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? When you're down 30 after three, it's kind of hard to turn it on after that. So.
Yeah. You know, with that being said, their offense, with the exception of adding an offensive lineman, I don't think Deal will be back. They'll add an offensive lineman. But their offense, what you saw this year, is going to be personnel-wise pretty much the same as next year, wouldn't you think? I mean, they're going to have the two big wide receivers. Their third, fourth, fifth wide receivers are going to be the same. You're going to have Randall. You're going to have, Hickson. I think Black Unicorn will be back.
Yeah.
You're going to have David Wilson playing a bigger role. Andre Brown will be back. I think that there's not a lot you need to do on the offense. There's not a lot you can do. I mean, I don't know what, you know, your offense, that is their offense. I don't think that this season puts them back anything. That's why when you look at this season, granted, it was obviously disappointing. But the future for the Giants is a lot different than the future for the Jets.
Yeah.
Because you know your core. You know, what their issues in the offseason are going to be addressing the defensive line. I guess re-signing Kenny Phillips, right? His contract is up, or?
Yeah, and, you know, Kenny did not make a really bold statement in his last year of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically, athletes, they have somebody find their challenge in the last year of the contract, and then that's what scores them the big bucks. This year, Kenny was pretty much sidelined the entire year. But I would like to see him back strictly because that three-safety look, it does so well for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I address this in the post on tristatesportsguys.com, but linebacker might be a situation you have to address. Cornerback is definitely something you have to address.
100%.
Corey Webster, God bless him. I think he needs to just hang him up, and they need to put him in some ring of honor at some point. But, you know, Terrell Thomas, is he going to come back
after
another horrendous ACL injury? Is he going to be able to come back and be the kind of one of the top corners in the league before the second time he injured himself. So I wouldn't mind if they go out and either sign a free agent or get a high draft pick on a corner, but I really want to see them solidify the offensive line because they're getting old. Persony, even though he's for another Pro Bowl season, his hip is a concern. And, you know, I just would like to see them shore up that offensive line because you can see when Eli gets time, I mean, just like any NFL quarterback, really, if you give them time, they're going to pick you apart. But with Eli, it's just, you know.
You know exactly what you're getting.
Yeah.
I don't know that with Mark Sanchez. You know, we didn't get to see it, but it's not like I could say, oh, yeah, if you gave Mark Sanchez time, he'd go out and go for 4,500 yards. You don't know that. You know Eli will do that. And I will say this about the Giants organization, and, you know, we did our ranking sort of – we ranked all the New York teams where we ranked them organizationally, and I said the Giants, to me, were far and ahead of everyone else. And that's why I trust them to go address those things. And if I'm a Giants man, I'm not even worried about it. They do it time and time again. They find people in the draft, and they're able to do it time and time again, whether it's in, you know, normally they're getting late first-round picks. Now they're going to have a mid-first-round pick. They're going to hit a home run there. I mean, I'm going to go out and that's not a bold prediction.
Yeah.
Who they get in that first round is going to impact the Giants' season positively next year. And I'm so confident in that. And I think as a Giants fan, you should be very confident in that. They have the track record. If they're going to draft somebody, they work out.
Yeah. And, you know, you saw it with Reuben Randall towards the end. He had a pretty decent game against the Eagles. And I think that he can emerge, he can be that number three guy, and he'll have a even better season next year. I don't know about Pro Bowl, but I think that, you know, I won't be as I won't lack as much confidence next year if Victor or Hakeem go down, because I know Ruben, he's shown flashes enough for me to step up and be that.
He works well in that offense because he's the home run type guy.
Yeah.
Which they are, and we talked about it a little bit last week when I was talking with Coach Ireland, and kind of disagree with me, but I'm like, that's what their offense is set up on, is hitting the home run.
They had to make the plays, and they didn't make the plays this year.
And I said that about Eli. I mean, there were plenty of times when you see a guy streaking down the field open and he overthrew him. Or
alligator arms.
Or alligator arms.
A lot of alligator
arms. Yeah, right.
And, you know, I think that had to do a lot with Victor Cruz. Everyone's head-hunting on Victor Cruz this year.
Yeah. Take the flag, I'll take the line, you know, we're going to take the win. So, yeah, I agree there. But, like I said, if I'm a Giants fan, obviously very disappointing season, but that's a 9-7 season. If a 9-7 season disappoints you that much, what does it say about your organization?
It's great
that your organization is.
It's disappointing. Because it's just knowing that we would have been we're a different team in the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
Knowing that, I mean, as long as we just get to the playoffs, you know, whatever. But, you know, I don't need another Super Bowl trophy. I just want to see, you know, playing in January.
Yeah, that's it, man. Well, we're going to transition over to the Jets. I will give one more quick plug to our website, www.tristatesportsguys.com. Tony, Neil, they've been doing a great job uploading new content every day. Like I said, I'm going to have an article up by the end of the night tonight you'll be able to check out, where I compare the disappointments of both New York franchises. And now we're transitioning over to the New York Jets. You know, laughably, Mark Sanchez had to start this game. Now, that happened. That news broke after our show, so we weren't able to talk about it last week. But even at this point, as much of a Tebow hater as I am, and I don't think he's a talented quarterback, how you don't start him makes no sense on so many different levels. Look, Sanchez, I know they can't get rid of him, even if you believe there's some talent, untapped talent in there, it wasn't going to come out week 17 after being benched and after his last start being that atrocious game against the Titans. So, and even as just a football move, going forward, they're going to have to cut Tim Tebow. If he had gone out and looked great somehow in that game, then maybe you can get a seventh-round pick or a sixth-round pick for him. Maybe now that sparks Jacksonville to say, we're going to have to give up a little something, and then you get something. Nobody at this point, there's, you know, that fake fear that the Jets, and maybe this was true earlier in the season, they didn't want to put Tebow in because they didn't want him to be the future, and they didn't want him to go on some run and win a couple games that they should have won, and then put this question mark in. If he went in, maybe it would have embarrassed them to say, well, we could have won a few more games this year. But nobody, no smart Jet fan would have said him going out and beating the Bills is going to be enough to say, let's bring him back and give him a big extension and pay him $6 million a year. You know, to me, there was no downside to playing Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Put him out there. If he does bad, then you say, look, this is why we didn't play him.
Exactly.
If he does well, then, okay, maybe we'll get a sixth or seventh round pick for him. It made no sense on any level, regardless of the fact that Mark Sanchez was not going to play a good game.
Right.
It was
already a foregone conclusion. I mean, it seems like everyone, either, you know, in the organization or outside in the media, everyone said, well, Sanchez is obviously done.
He wasn't going to re-sign an extension.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like he wanted to stay. It was the first time in Tim Tebow's life he was showing a bit of honesty and saying, like, I'm going to address this in the off season. Like, he was not saying all the right things. For the first time in his life, he was saying, like, look, I hate it here.
Yeah.
These people stink. I want to get out of here. This is the craziest organization in all of sports. Let me out. He was not going to, he would take less money to go play for Jacksonville at this point.
I mean, that was just, it was just a death blow. And you wonder what, if the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't exist, where Tim Tebow's head would be at.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that many other teams are considering him other than the Jaguars. And then to have your head coach, after you spent an entire season with him, in practice, in meetings, one-on-ones, whatever you want to say, to have your coach come out and say, I'm more comfortable with Mark Sanchez running the offense, blah, blah, blah. That's not week 17 talk.
Well, it was a short week because we didn't find out until Wednesday night. So, like, he didn't understand the offense so much that they were going to have to teach it to him in a week. Like, it made zero sense. And it showed it was, I don't even know how to explain it. And I'm a Rex defender till the day I die.
Yeah.
I can't defend that move. I wonder, he takes full credit for it because it was completely his decision. And it could be that he's that, and I can see that. He's that egotistical and, it's my way or the highway, and I believe that. That's one of his downfalls. But, man, it made no sense. Now, going forward, they got rid of Tannenbaum. It looks like Sperano will be gone shortly. Petten is going to leave.
Sperano's gone.
And he left today?
Yeah, I just saw they had, a very sad moving video of him slow-mo walking.
Going back to the University of New Haven, where he got his career started.
Yeah.
So he's gone. We know that's going to happen. The Petten leaving, I wrote an article about the site, what that really means, and I think he's going to have a tough time. Nobody's going to believe his resume for a lot of reasons, and I pointed him out. People still think of that as Rex Ryan's defense. He's making the play calls. He's responsible for them being a top-five defense year in and year out. So he's going to have to go prove himself wherever he goes. He'll get a job, but it won't be with the Jets. So I think replacing him, I'm not saying it'll be easy because I don't know what kind of impact he had. I really don't. It's nobody that could tell you what he was really doing. I think that, he was good. He must have learned a lot. You can't accidentally be the defensive coordinator on a top-five defense every year. But
I'll say this. In the searches related to Tony Sperano section of Google search, it says Tony Sperano bad calls. That's how many people are searching for Tony Sperano bad calls.
I don't know where he finds a place in the league, even as possibly an offensive line coach, because you look at the offensive line play this year. I mean, that was the thing for Tony Sperano. Okay, he's an offensive line guy. They gave up 11 sacks in week 16 to, the
Chargers.
5-11 Chargers, whatever they were. They weren't able to be this ground and pound team. And they weren't, so it wasn't they had, he had that offensive line shored up. And they have a lot of money invested in that offensive line. So it's not just a bunch of no-name guys. So he can't, and he's, for good or bad, and he's going to be responsible for that Vlad Dukas Slauson platoon, which is just unheard of at guard. I don't know where he finds a job. He's going to have to go back to college, to be honest with you. Who's going to hire him in the NFL after that debacle of the season?
Maybe Shawnee will take him.
He might. I mean, they got a good offensive line coach, though. That guy, I don't know his name, but he's good.
Yeah.
That guy over there. They produce talent out of that North High program. But so back to Petten quickly. I mean, I think what they're going to look to do at the defensive quarter position is find, a linebackers coach somewhere, find a D-line coach somewhere. They're not going to go out and add a Romeo Crennel, because Romeo Crennel's not going to want to come coach, a real high-profile guy's going to go back. And I think Romeo Crennel's a great defensive coordinator. Not a good head coach, but a great coordinator. He turned around Kansas City's defense 2 years ago before he got, promoted. He was great. So there are guys they're not going to bring in that. And I don't think it's worth spending the money on because it's still going to be Rex's thing for a year. And I don't think a big-time guy wants to be the defensive coordinator under Rex. So they'll go out and find that. I'm not worried about that. They're going to find that some guy who's, a young 35-year-old linebackers coach somewhere. Maybe they promote within. I don't know, the assistant coaching tree at Jets camp, but they'll find someone. I'm not worried about that. Offensively, what they need to do, and I'm not an expert on all of these GMs that are available. I know Pioli because everybody knows Pioli, but I don't know a lot of these guys that they're talking about. They're interviewing personnel, this guy, that guy. I don't follow that stuff. But what they need to do to me, more importantly than who they bring in, they need to detach Rex from personnel decisions. And granted, he is to blame for some of the personnel choices that were made because he had a hands-on role in all that. But he shouldn't have that responsibility. He, you know, I think that the trend, which started with Parcells and Holmgren had the same thing, all these things that these head coaches have all this control over all of those things, I don't think those things work anywhere, let alone Rex Ryan, who is not a good, you know, surveyor of talent because he thinks he can coach anybody because of his ego. But even if you look at the Giants, I mean, Coughlin is one of the best head coaches in the league. He's not a top three coach in the league. But personnel decisions, they have a strong front office. They make personnel decisions. I'm sure they consult him to an extent. But they're not. They don't let Tom Coughlin go out there and pick and choose all of his players. They have. I think you need to have that separation between the GM and Rex Ryan. And I think especially with Rex Ryan, he will coach. You give him guys, he'll coach them. He can't pick the guys because it's almost like he wants to. He has that chip on his shoulder that I have at times in my life where I'm like, oh, you think you're better than me? I'll pick this guy and beat you with him, which is great and all, but you can't pick your team that way. I'll take the 5'5" guy, have him playing point guard, and I'll still beat you. And that's his kind of philosophy in life, and I don't think that works at the NFL level. You need to bring in a guy who says Rex. And I like the fact that he's not involved at all in this GM search. You need to bring in a guy, and I think hopefully Woody Johnson gets this and says, Rex, this guy is going to be in charge of personnel. When you get your team, you coach the team that we give you. And I think the same goes for the offensive coordinator. I don't think he should have any say in it. I said last year they should have hired Mike Martz, and some people laughed at me, but I said they need a guy you could pick and choose whether you think that his system would fit with the talent they have. But Mike Martz would not listen to Rex Ryan. That would be a situation like Buddy Ryan and, you know, that offensive coordinator where he punched the guy. Like, they'll fight.
Kevin Gilbride.
Yeah, Kevin Gilbride, that's right. They need to have that. Kind of, he needs to have you. He doesn't even pay attention when the offense is on the field. Let an offensive coordinator come in and just take the offense and run because Rex doesn't want to be a part of it. He doesn't know enough to be a part of it. And I think he can be successful if he's just like, all right, bring it. I mean, I brought up North Turner's name 3 or 4 weeks ago on the show.
Yep.
He would be perfect. Whether he wants to come here, I don't know. He might want to come here because he might see the writing on the wall with Rex Ryan and say, I might. You know, show that I could turn this offense around and become the head coach in 2014.
Right.
So he might be a guy that he has, you know, he might want to come here. You know, they need a guy who they can just hand the offense to, who's innovative, who can show that, and there's a plethora out there that can do that. And then hand it over to him. A young guy or a guy like, you know, North Turner, or bring back Mike Martz from wherever he is right now. Pull Charlie White back in the NFL. Like, Charlie White, you run the offense. You know, do this for us, you know. Whether Haley gets axed in Pittsburgh for all the problems he's having with Big Ben.
Yeah.
Bring Haley in here and let him be, you know.
I think that's a time bomb.
Well, hey, it's better than having a guy who's a yes man, the Rex Ryan, which is what Tony Sperano was. And he comes across as this big, tough, rough-and-tough guy, yeller. He was a yes man, the Rex Ryan. They don't need that. They need a guy who will stand up to Rex Ryan and Haley, I think, will stand up to anybody.
Yeah.
And just say, screw you, Rex. This is how we're running the offense. You go over with defensive players and whatever. And that's what I think they need to do.
I think Haley would be a horrendous hiring.
Who do you want? I mean, assuming North Turner doesn't come, because obviously North Turner is number one on the list. He's number one on a lot of them. I think you bring in a guy like that who has had success at the NFL level.
He didn't have success last year, but that's a different organization. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I think you look at the top offense, consistently top-performing offenses in the league, and then you just look at the staff mm-hmm. tree. Like, obviously, you might not get that high-profile offensive or defense coordinator, but you're going to get that hungry wide receivers coach or quarterbacks coach who has shown a lot of promise. Like you said, there's a young talent.
Who wants to be head coach someday.
Wants to be a head coach or even wants to, you know, wants to step it up, wants to get to that next level. That's how most coaching works. You know, Tom Coughlin was a wide receivers coach with the Giants back in the late 80s. So, you know, and take a look at the teams that have had a ton of success and poached their talent. You look at remember that 30 for 30 or football life on the Cleveland Browns coaching staff of the mid-90s and how they all have dispersed around the NFL. You look at the Patriots coaching staffs of the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and how they dispersed. Just look at the consistently top-performing offenses and poach. and poach and poach and poach. And at some point, talent does come into it, you know, and say what you will about the weapons that the Jets have, but they, I mean, they have to make, it's hard to say what kind of value they have other than we're just going to trade away a ton of low round draft picks. And it's been basically mortgages their future to get the difference makers in the first two or three rounds. Like just go fire sale with the Patriots.
Yeah.
And offer up like 5, 6, 7 for the next 3 years to get a bunch of first rounders and second rounders because there's a dearth of talent on that offense, the side of the ball.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you there. I'm going to bring up one other name.
But the salary cap is going to be huge.
Be a huge hindrance. That's why I think the offensive coordinator position is their biggest need in this offseason because they don't have the flexibility. You know what their needs are on offense, talent-wise. But where do they have the flexibility to go do it? I mean, I think they have the 9th pick. I would assume they're going to go with an offensive player at some position. I think offensive line is where they really need to go at 9 as opposed to a wide receiver, but I'm going to go throw one more name that you might laugh at for offensive coordinator. A little blast in the past. And I know you might say they're never going to bring in a former Giants guy, but why not Jim Fossil?
Oof.
Guy had success as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He has had some failures, but.
No, that was all Sean Payton. I mean, that was all Sean Payton. I mean, when Sean Payton was the offensive coordinator, it was completely different. I mean, Kerry Collins all of a sudden was a
4,000-yard guy.
Imani Toomer was breaking franchise records. And,
so you don't put anything in there?
Jim Fossil, though. No, that's all Sean.
Have you been following his UFL career? I don't know. Maybe he's been good. I don't know what kind of talent he had out there.
He turned the locomotive around.
I've really been a juggernaut out there.
Yeah.
You can only go all in so many times, Jim. Everyone's like, you know what? I don't want to gamble with you anymore.
So that's it. It's amazing that he hasn't gotten another head coaching job, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, that's got to be a telltale sign.
It's weird, though. I mean, the guy had a career record over 500. It's not like he went to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a failure.
Look at
other coaches that get opportunities, and he doesn't even get brought up. You don't even hear his name.
Yeah,
like,
because look at his supporting cast, John Fox and Sean Payton. I mean, that's pretty much, in my opinion, why they did so well.
Okay.
And, you know, he was a good motivator, but I think people kind of saw through that after
the
Super Bowl.
All right. Well, I mean, as far as what they have to do to their run.
That wild card collapse in 03.
You nailed your coffin, Jim.
You ain't no good. As far as what they got to do with their roster, you know, we've talked at length about what they need to do with the quarterback position and that's going to be a hindrance to them, in my opinion, possibly bringing in a guy like Mark Turner. Is he going to want to take over a team that doesn't have a quarterback? Although I've predicted Michael Vick, I think a smarter decision, something they could probably afford, is bringing in a Kyle Orton or a Matt Moore, somebody that's started in the NFL, has been a backup, though, for a few years. I think Matt Moore's got enough talent to be decent.
Because I don't know that you're going to get anyone in the draft. I mean, it's the
worst. You're not going to get a guy in the draft unless you take a flyer on a mid-round guy and hope it turns out to be Russell Wilson or something. They're not going to use that first-round pick on a quarterback. I really don't think they can. It'd be a waste because they don't have the talent around to develop them and all that stuff. But bring in a David Garrard who's coming off the injury. Maybe, you know, he'll come back next year. I mean, he was slated as being the starting quarterback in Miami, so he's still got some talent. Bring in somebody like that you can get for a couple million bucks that could – challenge.
Well, you're so high on Alex Smith. Why not bring in Alex Smith?
It costs too much money. Alex Smith's going to cost money, man. I like Alex Smith. He's going to cost money. I mean, I want Tony Romo. You know that, but. I love Tony Romo so much. It's my love affair for Tony Romo. I'm the only one around that loves him, but he's so good. They're going to have to revamp their offense strictly with the draft. The problem is they also need some things on the defensive side of the ball. Unless Copels could turn into a real pass rusher, they need a pass rushing linebacker. I don't know if it's possible. I don't know, you know, salary cap wise whether they can at this point. How much guaranteed money they owe Santonio Holmes? But if they could free up money by cutting Santonio Holmes and getting another wide receiver for that same price, I would do it because his contract. I said it the day they signed it was a joke. That they gave him that much money. If that's something, I don't understand NFL salary caps well enough to be an expert on it, but they need to, I'm sure there's a wide receiver out there they can get that would be better than Santonio Holmes for that money that they're spending on him. So, but they're going to, the bulk of what they do is going to have to be done during the draft. And then you're going to, you know, you look at a guy like, you know, Alfred Morris, they get in the sixth round and rush for 1,600 yards. I think the Jets could never do that. The Jets trade up to get Sean Green in the third round. You know, the Jets draft Joe McKnight in the fourth round. How come other teams are able to get Arian Foster off the scrap heap who's undrafted? Yeah. And the other teams are able to do that. And
I
the
gotta
Jets
believe,
are drafting John Connor.
Because I got to believe it stems from the ownership. It stems from the ownership and who they hire as the scouts and the general manager. And as soon as you get those pieces in place, like the Giants did with George Young in the late 70s, they build that team with Lawrence Taylor, Phil Sims, et cetera. And then again in the mid-2000s with Jerry Reese.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it stems from. It stems from smart people
saying, oh, David Wilson fell to our lap at the 30th pick,
yeah,
the 32nd pick.
Reviewing and analyzing and saying that to themselves, we've crunched the numbers, we've done the calculations,
mm-hmm, but
this is our smartest bet.
Yeah,
and it's not gonna 100% accuracy, but it's better than zero.
I think when you have a top 10 pick, though, as an overall strategy, you got to go with the best player on the board because they have so many needs. I don't think you say, well, so and so's out there, and we haven't, but we really need whatever. Because I think, you know, like the Giants did, they were fine at running back, and they still drafted David Wilson. I think when you have a top 10 pick, you don't want to be the Raiders who said, well, we need a wide receiver. We're going
right.
to take Darius Haywood Bay.
Yeah.
Because we need a wide receiver.
Yeah.
I think you need to take
all those DNs, and they still won't win JPP.
Because they're like,
yeah,
we can't pass this
right,
up.
Yeah.
This is, and they stick to this is our draft board. Here's what it is. And, you know, this is the next highest guy, and this is what we, and I think that's what the Jets have to get back to doing. Not that they ever did it, but that's what they have to do. Instead of going into their first round pick and say, well, their real need is X, they have to say,
but there comes a point, like I want to say, third or fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you still go for the best player on the board. I don't know.
No, I know. At
yeah,
some point,
you're
going to fill your roster. Yeah.
Stockpile at the positions where you're weak.
100%. But when you have and I even think if it was a 25th pick, then you could say, well, we need a linebacker. But when you have a top 10 pick, a lot of times there isn't. You know, if your need is wide receiver, which the Jets is. You know, it's hard to justify unless you have a Calvin Johnson or somebody using a ninth pick overall. And I could be wrong. They might have the 10th pick. I don't know what it is. I think it's like the ninth, eighth, the 10th pick, whatever it is, using it on a wide receiver just because you need it. If that guy doesn't justify it, you know. Like the Raiders, again, as an example, drafting Robert Gallery with the second pick because they needed an offensive lineman, go out and get, you know, who you need, you know, or go out and get who the best is out there. So, that's just my opinion of it. It'll be an interesting offseason.
Maybe they pick up Denard Robinson and they can do the run Wildcat.
I'm going to tell you right now where he's going. He's going to the Oakland Raiders. He is going to the Oakland Raiders. And I have some Oakland Raiders stuff, and so does O. And he's
already got it pre-ordered. Robinson jersey, number 16.
He's got the Raiders in his bold predictions, as do I. Before we get to the bold predictions, Neil, we got about 15 minutes left, so we're going to do quick days, maybe just like five so minutes on days, or do you want to go?
Screw it.
Screw days.
And people might say, dude, are you serious with screwing days? But
I like that.
Screw it because
I'm
so pumped about
you flip the script on a days. You're dude, are you serious? Dude, are you serious? We're not doing days?
Yeah.
I like that.
You're not serious if you don't think we're going to focus on
we're doing goal prediction. I'm going to run through O's quickly. I'm going to discuss them. O gave me five. Now, he hit a home run on Tim Tebow not starting a game. So I allowed him to write in his top five bold predictions, starting with the Oakland Raiders. Number five, Terrell Pryor will start all 16 games next season, barring injury. But he's going to start. But I'm not throwing. I'm throwing out the barring injury thing. He's going to start all 16 games next year. God bless him. I don't know if he's hoping for that or he thinks it's going to happen, but I don't think that. That's a bold prediction. That
he does.
Wrong day one.
I think he has an incentive in his contract that if he starts all 16, he gets another free tattoo.
I think he does, yeah. He owns his housing bar right now. Number four, a little vague, but I kind of like this one. A big-time athlete, and size athlete, will get suspended for steroids. Could be any sport.
Any sport, all right.
Now, I really think that only pertains, in my opinion, to baseball. When you talk about it, it's clearly something to basketball. Football, everybody gets suspended for steroids.
Yeah.
So, I think he really means, and if it's going to be the A-Rod caliber, he's talking about like a Pujols or Cabrera or somebody
yeah.
like that. That's
yeah.
a bold prediction. So, he's saying somebody
like
big, an all-star
like
type guy can get suspended for steroids. Number three, Notre Dame is under 500 next year.
Ooh. That's bold. And I hope to God he's wrong about that. Under 500 next year.
But that's kind of been the
Notre Dame's strategy. That's been their MO recently. They have a new coach come in, Willingham, Weiss come in, do well for a season, and then crap the bed and do bad. So maybe he's right. Number two, gets related to some extent, Tim Tebow. Next year will be his final year in the NFL as a quarterback. Pretty bold. I can see it happening.
Yeah.
This is the last shot. He don't catch on somewhere next year. It's not like they're going to be, let's go back and retread that from, 3 years ago. So Tim Tebow, final year in the NFL as a quarterback. And number one, someone else will win the Triple Crown next year, and he predicts Joey Votto. Joey Votto will win the Triple Crown in the National League.
Hands down.
Mark it down. Osama says
guarantees
Joey Votto. Find that
one
line. Go out to Vegas. Find a line. Go up to Luxor somewhere.
Joey Votto is single. This is O's word, by the way. Joey Votto is single-handedly going to bring back the relevancy of the Triple Crown.
He's going to win running away, and he's going to lead the league and run score just to like, okay. I'm just going to show you how a Triple Crown is really, really made up. So why don't you give me your top 10 bowl predictions? Because you're so excited. You forewent days for it.
And big time.
Go ahead. What do you got?
So I actually only have 9.
I like that.
But I'm going to go. My bowl prediction is I will not have a 10th bowl prediction. No. I'll think of the 10th one on the fly as it comes to me. But
okay.
No particular order. Number 10, Mariano Rivera fails to crack 20 saves. Yankees miss the playoffs. So it's kind of a combined.
Well, there's your 9 and 10 there.
Well, I did that. I have layered bold predictions. It's kind of like chain reaction.
And then this happens, and then baseball crumbles.
I got a lot of parlays with bold predictions.
Got parlays.
So that's my first one.
Wow, that happens, and the Yankees will miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't see him coming back and being as effective as he was. And take into consideration that it's not all on Mariano. I mean, the Yankees have to put him in the situation to get the save as well.
He might have 21 opportunities.
Exactly. And then piggybacking on that, it got me thinking, well, who's going to win the AL East? And I think that Robert Allen Dickey just misses getting 20 wins.
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays get beat in the ALCS in 7 games.
I like that. Now, Vegas has the Blue Jays, way high.
Yeah.
But
I'm into it. I don't think it's the Miami Marlins.
That's what I was going to ask you. Don't think they're the Marlins.
I don't think it. I think this guy, GM, I forget, he's a young guy.
He's a Greek guy.
But, it seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's making some moves that just make sense. I mean, adding R.A. Dickey and everyone thought that Jose Reyes would be a perfect fit for Miami. And obviously didn't turn out that way, but they already had a pretty good lineup.
Very good lineup.
Joey Bats,
Yeah. Encarnacion, if he can come back, and O predicted he was going to be a stud, and he was. He was nasty.
And they had, Brendan Morrison, I think. He looked pretty good against the Mets. I think that's, the starting rotation.
He didn't sound like a real person, but I'm going to, whoever he is. Full prediction, a guy named Brandon Morse will be in the MLB. I could be right. I don't know what his name is, but he sounds really good.
I'm probably way off. Brandon Morse.
Yeah.
He played
against us.
Definitely not.
All right, what else you got?
So that was number 9. Number 8, the New York Knickerbockers lose to the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals in 7 games.
Okay. We'll get to mine. I got a different take on the Knicks and my bold predictions, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that unless people start guarding the 3, the Knicks look like they have the staying power, and a lot of it depends on how Stoudemire fits into the mix.
He almost cried last night, but reaction he got. So. just as an aside, I don't know how that impacts your top 10.
Well, there was a
bold prediction: every Knick will cry and
will cry for every game. But I mean, they were saying that they were willing to give Stoudemire up for free.
Yeah,
and now it looks like he could be
smell 30 and 30.
He could be pivotal. so that's number 8. Number 7, the Los Angeles Lakers will end the season on an unbelievable hot streak led by Steve Gollum Nash.
Yeah.
But lose in the Western Conference Finals.
Okay. If they make it to the Western Conference Finals, Lakers fans would be dancing in the streets, I think.
Start. You know, and I'm not going to pull an O and, like, put all kinds of asterisks all over.
If everyone says they'll be, and if Kevin Durant's out for the season, and.
So it was what? Six. NHL donezo. They're going to cancel the season for good. Bettman retires because he's ashamed of his reign.
Love the layers.
And the Devils, because of this whole fiasco, seriously consider relocation. I know it's not as bold as relocating, but, I mean, it's like it's going to be like John Bon Jovi's going to have to do the charity concert. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're going to have to pull together our resources.
He just built an arena.
Yeah.
it's
going to be like a Hurricane Sandy situation
where
they're going to have to rally together. To
12-13 concert.
Save the devil.
Who is back?
And then all right, so number five, and everyone's saying this to the contrary, screw this guy. Well, not screw him, but I appreciate what he's done. Tiger Woods will not win a major and will contemplate retirement.
I almost had the first part of that in my top ten. I only went with, I have one golf thing, so I didn't want to have two golf things because golf's not that interesting to me. But that's a good one. I like the in contemplation. You like the, you like an existential level. Like everything's contemplating and people will consider. You're like in people's minds, which I like. That's why it's bold.
Yeah.
My God. He went with the mind reading aspect. We're going to report it either way. It will be on the Tragic Sports Guys. Tiger Woods considering retirement. The sources are saying.
The New York Giants will land, and it's a soft free agent class. But so this is kind of relative. They will land a top free agent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which position. My mind reading skills is on the fritz.
LeRon Landry.
Possibly. They land a top free agent that will catapult them to a division title and a first round win. I don't see them getting beyond the first round, though.
Okay. I almost had the Giants winning the East in my bold predictions. I don't know how bold it was, so I looked up. I like that the top free agent thing is a bold.
The New York Mets will send four
players. I don't have my glasses on. I think it's four players to the All-Star game.
Four players to the All-Star game. The New York Mets are
Major League Baseball All-Star game. It's just like a futures game.
This is
they had a great talent pool down at AAA, I know.
It's not an old-timer game.
Wow.
The Mets are hosting the All-Star game this year, correct?
Correct, yeah.
They're sending four.
We're going to that game.
We're going.
If they send four, we're going. We're reporting live.
Yeah. I don't know where that fourth one is yet, but I know two of them.
Well, they just signed some guy from the Rockies, AAA, so a 28-year-old guy, Alex Brown or somebody, crushes it in AAA.
That was going to be number one, but yeah. Number two, despite a horrendous draft.
I just went through saying the only way they could be found. Is it they have a draft?
The New York Jets will rebound to make the playoffs, but get blown out in the first round.
I'll take that. Sign me up, dude. Hopefully they get a home game. I can make some money.
I think that's what they're going to say when they're pitching season tickets to everyone.
Yeah.
And the number one bold prediction, the Tri-State Sports Guys, a year from now, will be on national syndicated radio.
I like that. I don't know how bold that is. I think most experts are already.
Yeah,
Met is already writing articles about it. And they are. Everybody steals our stuff anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, we predicted Vic to the Jets 10 weeks ago. I don't give him credit. All right, I'm going to go through my top 10 quickly. Number 10, Johnny Football, not even a Heisman finalist next year.
Ugh.
Sophomore
slump.
It's hard to repeat anyway. But I don't know how bold it is. But I don't even think he's in. I don't even think he's in the Heisman conversation after week five. Number 9, Matt Harvey, 200 strikeouts this year for the Mets. Like that, right?
Yeah.
You can do it.
I'll probably put him on a pitch limit or some
garbage. Right on those costs. Sorry, Mike. Number 8, after this season having, you know, all these rookies having, four rookies starting week one, all these guys, I don't think week one, 2013, not one rookie quarterback will start in the NFL.
Okay.
No Geno Smith, I don't want to hear about Matt Barkley. None of them are going to start week one. Number 7, you predicted similar. Yankees missed the playoffs. I predicted last year, my ball predictions, the Yankees and the Phillies. Phillies did miss out on the playoffs.
And the Yankees, despite that one run, were kind of in jeopardy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that pick was looking good
for
a long time. This probably should be higher if we were actually going to rank them in order. I think before the end of 2013, Rex Ryan signs an extension with the Jets.
Oh.
Jesus. I think that some GM's going to not want, like, oh, I don't want to be saddled with Rex Ryan.
Ugh.
He's going to finally get his own, okay, I'm handling the defense.
some guy comes in, Jim Fossil comes in, gets a high-powered offense going, and boom, signs an extension probably before December 1st. All right, number five, this is my
Raiders will draft anyone.
He might draft in the first round. He did declare, you know, back in November he's going to come out. I don't know where he's falling on draft boards. I mean, he's got Raiders written all over him.
Yeah, they're working out.
I don't even think he even needs to put him in the draft. Just put him on the Raiders.
Yeah.
He's going to be a Raider. My pick for number four, the Knicks don't make it out of the first round again.
Ooh. Okay.
Everybody's loving them. We had our caller, Mike from Western PA, a couple weeks ago. Hating on the Knicks. I was all about that. Got me fired up, thinking about the Knicks. What can I say bold about the Knicks? I'm telling you, you live by that three, you get into the playoffs,
yeah,
figure it out. They don't make it out of the first round. Woodson's in trouble. Number three, this is bold. Now, Andrew Luck, sophomore slump, finishes with more picks than touchdowns next year.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a fact.
That already happened. I went. At the
Go write that down, fantasy football folks. Andrew Luck will throw more interceptions. He might throw 25 touchdowns
with
26 picks. I'm telling you, they're going to have a tougher schedule next year. They're still not going to have a running game. All that emotion's gone.
The dude needs like a voice modulator.
Yeah, he's such a nerd. For a guy that, he carries himself. He's just a quarterback. He's such a dork. This is more of what I'm kind of rooting for because of the bet. And this is before – we talked about this on the show before you joined the show, but I don't know if you're familiar with this bet. Rory McIlroy's father, he was like 15 years old, placed a bet with a bookie in Scotland that his son would win the British Open before he turned 25. He's 23 right now. And the bet, I don't know what he put down. He got crazy odds because he was a nobody. I mean, he was good. He's like a good amateur. He's like a nobody. If he wins, he wins like $250,000. It's like a ridiculous thing. I'm saying Rory McIlroy wins the British Open this year at 24. Pay his father. Pay to me.
And then you get a cut?
And then I get a cut for predicting it. And then my number one bold pick, I say that Notre Dame's going to win the national championship on Monday night. They're going to win it. I think they win it by 7 points. I think they dominate this game.
There's got to be some seriously horrible reffing going on.
Well, they will. I mean, look, come on.
The reffing has been pretty bad so far, but.
I think Notre Dame goes out and wins himself a national championship. If O's right, they go from a national championship to a 4-7 game, 4-7 season. I'll be rooting for Notre Dame in every game next year except BC, just so I can see my man Kevin go out there and do work, Norwalk native. Those are my top 10 bold predictions. I like it.
Yeah, those are some pretty good predictions.
I'm going to say, I didn't save mine last time, and so I don't remember all the picks I had. I know the one that sticks in my head the most.
You're going to end up wiping JMO with that.
This has got daughter poo written all over it. I'll tell you that right now. Probably none of these come true, but I like this one. I think that a lot of these are going to come true. And so if you could find me on a prop bet site somewhere, go talk to your guy. Get some, everybody's got a guy out there that does, give me a prop bet on no rookie quarterback starting week one after this trend is everybody's going to be starting. And I've already seen that they're, Geno Smith's going to go number one. He didn't look too good the other day. Lost couple shekels on that game. Thanks there, Gino. there's nothing better than making bold predictions. If you have any bold predictions and you're listening to us right now, I think what we need to do is put these on our website so it's permanently ingrained. We'll put O's on there.
Yep.
Because that's how confident O is that Joey Votto is going to win the Triple Crown. I think that's insane. I think all of O's. If I'm a betting man, I take all of O's and throw them in the garbage. But that's just my opinion. We're going to put O's up there. We'll put yours up there. Put mine up there. See if Tony D's got something. Next week, as a little teaser, you know who's going to be in studio?
I know, I don't.
A little man by the name of James Peter.
Oh, boy.
Back in full effect. He's coming to pick up his pullover jacket. Great jacket. I hope he rocks it everywhere. he'll be back in studio. We'll see what he's at. I mean, I remember his bowl prediction. I think he said Eagles are going to be 14-2 or 13-3. So I'm hoping he comes with some bold predictions for this coming up year. We're the Tri-State Sports, because, again, I'll give you our website one more time, and I'll give credit to Tony D again. He's been doing a great job updating the site daily. www.tristatesportsguys.com. You can always check us out on Facebook. We're always having great conversations on there. facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. Follow us on Twitter. What's our Twitter? TriState_Sports. That's easy to remember. TriState_Sports. I don't know if you don't remember that. And, again, you want to leave us a voicemail?
503-651-TSG1. No idea what those letters stand for.
Boom. We're the TriState Sports Guys. Check us out next week. James Pita is back.